Welcome to Parent Talk, the show for parents by parents, brought to you by the India Community Center. I'm your host, Vidya. As always, this is a live show and the call-in number is 510-770-1550. On this stormy Saturday, our topic for the day seems particularly appropriate because we're talking about how to save for a rainy day and leave our kids comfortably established for the future. We want them to have a good education. We want them to be financially secure. And today, I'll be talking to two financial planners about the ways to make your money work for your kids. With me in the studio today are Ariadne Horseman and Nipa Shah. Welcome, Ariadne and Nipa.
Thank you.
Ariadne is a cross-border personal finance consultant and an insurance specialist with State Farm, and Nipa is a money manager affiliated with Mass Mutual. We'll be taking calls during the show, so if you have a financial question, do ask our experts at 510-770-1550. Now, Nipa, what are the typical reasons parents need to save money for kids?
So typically when we think about saving, college saving comes to mind, and particularly in our community, in South Asian community, education tends to be our highest priority. When we are thinking about long-term savings, it's mostly saving for college education. But when you have kids, you know, you have whole lot of lots of different expenses. So after the kids are born, you have, you know, housing expenses, healthcare expenses. And then when they're ready to go to preschool expenses, as well as once they're done with preschool, then you think about, are you going to send them to private elementary and high school? And if so, then you have those expenses and you need to put aside money for, you know, private elementary and high school expenses as well. And then their college expenses. And then a lot of us, you know, when we are thinking about kids' future, we also ask ourselves, you know, after they're graduated from college, are you going to pay for their wedding? So that's another saving, right?
Pretty important.
So yeah, there are lots of different areas where we save for kids.
Ariadne, do you have anything to add to that in terms of what are the categories typically that parents save, and can you start saving for them even before your child is born? Is it something that you can, is this never too early to start?
Well, you can certainly start early. One other thing that I would add is some parents also like to save for a legacy to leave their children. Mm-hmm. And obviously in today's world, education can be so expensive, and just raising a child, there might not be that much left. But some people want to put aside money to leave to their children later. You can start before the child is born. You can start a couple of ways. You can save for yourself. You can start preparing for your own retirement so that you'll be well on your way to retirement planning. And then when the children come along, you can mm-hmm. focus more on the education savings.
Right.
And I think what you can also do is you can get yourself insured, get good life insurance even before your children are born. The earlier that you get it, the less expensive it is.
That's right.
And then you'll be prepared when the children come along.
What is the typical expense on a child during the parent's lifetime? What is there a ballpark figure that we should all be looking at?
Well, there are some figures. I looked this up on the web, and according to the U.S. Department of Agriculture, children who were born in 2010 will cost a middle-income family about $227,000 until age 18.
Till age 18.
That does not include college education.
And I'm sure in Bay Area it's much higher, right?
Yeah, we're probably busting the average,
right?
Yes.
Although I think, yeah, this might have been for California. I can look at the statistic. But in any case, it is expensive, definitely. Children are expensive.
And many people, before they start thinking about financial planning, are just putting some money aside in a savings account, consciously saving. It's in our community, Nipa, I think we are typically people who do save for our kids. So is putting money in a savings account, is that an inefficient way of doing this?
So as you know, Vidya, right, today in savings, if you are keeping money in savings account, you don't earn any interest. Even if you are earning interest, it's, you know, point something, much below even 1%. So when you keep money in savings account, you are really not keeping up even with inflation. So let's say often, you know, some clients that I meet, they say, you know, I'm keeping money in the savings account because I'm worried that in this, if I invest in the market, with the market fluctuation, I may lose money. But then keep in mind that when your savings account, when it doesn't even keep up with inflation, even though you are not there is no loss.
There's no risk.
There is no risk, but you are not keeping up with inflation. So with the dollar amount, what you were able to buy today, you know, with that same dollar, it's worth much less in future, right? So if you are saving for long term, say for your kids' college, etc., when you invest in market, yes, you are taking risk, but you should definitely consider other options.
We're going to take a break now, and when we come back, we're going to talk more specifically about what are the products and services available to parents to invest in their kids' education. We'll talk a little bit more about insurance, and later on in another segment, we'll talk about how parents who have property and money in India can deal with managing the money in the best way possible. Welcome back to Parent Talk. We have been talking today with financial planning experts Ariadne Horseman and Nipa Shah about the best ways to manage your money so that you leave your kids in a good position. In this segment, we'll be talking about education planning because that's such a big focus for people in our community. So Ariadne, what is the average spending that a parent can expect if their child wants to go to college in the United States?
So right now, you could plan on about $200,000 for a college education, a four-year college education. That's in today's dollars.
Is that just tuition, or is it tuition and living expenses?
That's sort of an overall average for private institutions. It could be less for a public institution. And these are vague, you know, obviously these are general numbers. But you need to allow for about a 5% education inflation rate, because education is increasing very rapidly right now.
So 5% a year is
right,
what you're looking at?
Right, okay. Approximately.
Yes, Nipa, go ahead.
I had looked up these numbers before I came to the studio, and just so that our listeners have idea, in today's dollar amount, cost to go to San Jose State is $21,000 roughly.
A year?
Per year. Mm-hmm. And this includes tuition and lodging expenses. UC Berkeley is about $31,000, and Stanford is about $54,000. And like Ariadne said, you should add about 5% inflation on top of that. That's an approximate number to get an idea on how much it would cost for your kids to go to college. So, so the first step when you're planning for your kids' education is just to get an idea on how much it would cost for your kids to go to college. So then, you know, you can plan to save.
So tell me, what are the options available to parents who are interested in their child going to college? During the break, we discussed how people with a lot of money, it's probably not a huge problem. People who are qualifying under income categories, that's also probably are eligible for certain grants through the federal government. But it's the people in the middle who don't really qualify on income basis for any special kind of help are the ones who are the most impacted by the cost of college education. So for middle-class, middle-income parents, what are the options available for saving for their child's education, making sure that they're not burdened by a huge amount of debt when they graduate?
Mm-hmm. Well, there are different options. The 529 plans are quite popular. It's a tax-free savings mechanism for college that you can use. And the 529 is an excellent vehicle because the money grows tax-free.
Just give me a brief overview of the 529. How does it work?
The 529 plans are run by the states. Each state has one or more plans. And in California, there's no tax advantage necessarily for investing in a California plan. So you could really pick a plan from any state, the one that you found to be the best. And you can put a certain amount of money into these plans every year, which is fairly generous. And the money is then invested in underlying investments, which mm-hmm. are mutual funds. You can choose the investments depending on the plan. And a lot of them are age-based. For example, they're very aggressive when the child is 6 months old, invested purely in stocks and aggressive stocks. And as the child grows older and closer to the age of college age, the investments become less aggressive and more stable so that you'll have the money available to you.
Right.
So that is an excellent way of saving. However, the 529 comes into the college planning calculation. So I suggest to everyone to at least attempt to apply for financial aid, no matter what your situation is, because mm-hmm. even for middle-class families, it's such a burden now to pay for college that you may end up getting some kind of financial aid, especially from private institutions.
So you shouldn't assume that because you have a certain income level that you would be ineligible for financial aid. You should try it anyway.
I think you should try it anyway, and there are a number of college education specialists, college planning specialists, who can help you through this process. There are actually two different college financial aid planning calculations. One is used mainly with the public institutions. One is used more with the private institutions, and they're totally different.
Mm-hmm.
They take into account different items, for example, the value of your house, the value of your retirement accounts. So they're very different, but I really recommend to everyone to try to look into all the scholarships available and try to find good solutions.
And the 529, yes, Nipa.
Just another thing about 529 plan is the biggest advantage that 529 plan offers is that money grows tax free. So the money that you invest is post tax money, but all the growth is tax free considering that it's used for education purpose.
Mm-hmm.
And it does, so it's a good way to invest so that your money can grow tax free. Though there are a few restrictions that this plan offers. So before you, invest in this plan, you should also know the restrictions, and a lot of the Indian clients who come to me, their concern always is, what if I move back to India, or what if my kids attend Indian colleges, right?
Mm-hmm.
So things to
point.
Know is that, you know, even so 529 plan is good as when your kids attend U.S. accredited universities.
Mm-hmm.
So most U.S. universities are covered under 529 plan, and some foreign universities are, though most Indian universities are, as of today, are not included in 529 plans. That may change tomorrow, but as of now, they are not. So if you have invested in 529 plan, and if your kids end up going to this university, say in India, as an example, and if you need to withdraw this money for, pay for tuitions in India, then you do end up paying 10% penalties on some of this growth that has occurred, and of course federal tax. Say you have more than one child, right? If you have mm-hmm. two children, then you can always change beneficiaries.
I see.
Right.
So even if one child doesn't take the benefit of the 529 plan as you assumed, you can always transfer it to another child.
Exactly.
Ariane, you had something to add?
I was just going to add regarding the foreign institutions. So there is a list. It's on the web where you can go and see which Indian universities are covered by the 529 plan. And NEPA is completely correct that many of them are not covered. But there is a substantial list that are covered by the 529 in India. I have checked
this out.
I wasn't
aware that was the case. That's interesting to know.
There are quite a few, yes. And so take a look at that. See which
what is the place? Where does one go to?
I can't remember, but I have researched this before. But I'm sure you could just Google something like 529 plans, which colleges in
eligible?
India are covered. But then again, you need to remember that the college costs in India are almost negligible compared to what we would pay here. So you might not need that much money to cover those costs. And I think I was going to make one other point.
The question I wanted to know was, what if you put this money in a 529 and then the child decides not to go to college? What happens then? Is there... You can just, I think you mentioned briefly that you can just withdraw the money and pay the penalty of a 10% tax on it.
Right.
So it operates as a savings account in a sense. And if I've invested, the 10% tax doesn't particularly seem burdensome, because obviously there would have been some growth in the plan as well, right?
Right.
Who manages the 529 plan?
Well, each state has their own plan, which is generally managed by financial institutions. So one state might have the plan managed by Vanguard. Another state might have it managed by Fidelity. They're all different. And there's
how do you evaluate, though?
Well, this is a very good question. So what I recommend everyone should do is go to Morningstar.com, and they have a 529 report that they put out every year, and they list the best and the worst.
I see.
I think you can get a vague idea of the best and the worst on Morningstar for free. You might have to sign up for a free trial or get a membership to get more details, but the Morningstar report is the definitive report on the best and the worst 529 plans.
Well, that's
so I really,
really
recommend that
really
one.
Really useful information, because I can see that I would go and check it out.
And one more detail, Regarding that, I think what's really important when you're looking at a 529 plan is to look at the quality of the underlying investments. And I think also NEPA had mentioned that you can use these plans for other children. You can change the name of the beneficiary. If one child doesn't go to college, it could be another child. It could be a sister or brother. It can also be for yourself.
Exactly, yes.
So if you decide to go back and do your PhD, you can use that money for yourself.
So what is the advantage of doing that, of putting some money in a 529? Is there any...
The tax-free growth.
The tax-free growth.
Exactly.
And then when you actually withdraw it to be used for the specific purpose of getting an education, it's just free money at that point.
Exactly, no tax.
So that's certainly useful. So you're listening to Parent Talk with Vidya, and we're talking to Nipa and Ariadne about education and other kinds of financial plannings. Before we move on to our next topic, just want to get this input from both of you. So are we sort of, is it a consensus that 529 is the best way to go to save for education, or are there other ways to do it?
I would typically advise clients that look at all your options that are available in market before you decide 529 plan is right option for you or not, mainly because most clients have this concern, right? What if they don't end up going to the university that is not covered under 529 plan, and if you don't like the penalty that's associated with it, then it may not be a good option for you, but it's certainly worth evaluating. I advise all clients to look into 529 plans, though there are a few other options.
So what are these?
Other options are, right, definitely. You can, of course, invest outside 529 plans. Just, you know, have your investment account on parents' name, any mutual fund account or stock accounts, right? And just keep that in mind, that that's for your kids' education. That's one way of investing. Often clients come to me and they ask me, why don't I open an account on children's name, right? So that's something that they also look into.
Account in a child's name, or
an
investment account in a
child's
name.
A bank account, right? And often they are called ATMA, UTMA or UGMA accounts. The reason government has started, or this type of accounts are
encouraged,
market is because often parents like to give away money to children on,
like inheritance.
Inheritance, right? Mm-hmm. And often they go through lawyers, and they have this somewhat lengthy and expensive process where they create a trust. But when they want to just give away smaller amount of money, this is an easier way to give away money. But to keep in mind that when you open this account on children's name, this is irrevocable. So once you give it or put it on children's account, you cannot take it back. And also,
but the 529, the parent has a full control of the funds.
Exactly, parents have full control. But this money, if you invest outside, either on your name or children's name, it could be used for any purpose. So it could be
used. It's free to be used.
Right.
Okay.
So there are no restrictions, right?
But what are the advantages of putting the money in one of these kind of accounts?
So advantages, there's no restriction in the sense, you could use it for...
But is it also tax-free growth?
It's not tax-free growth, definitely not. You do pay tax on it, so you don't have that advantage.
A parent decide to put some money in a child's name, in an investment account in a child's name, when they could just as easily do it in their own name?
Right. So often there is that conception that, they would be saving on taxes, but that saving on taxes is actually really small. Only now, up to $950 of unearned income is tax-free. After that, all the growth is taxed, even on this children's account. And other thing to know is, as soon as your children become adults, so when they become 18 in state of California, they can walk to the bank and they can
withdraw
the money. So it's, this is really not a very good idea.
Available.
It's available in the market.
Okay,
And there's one other issue with the they're called UGMA and UDMA accounts, is that they are part of the college education financial aid calculation, and they are money in the child's name. So when this calculation takes place, the worst thing is to have money in the child's
name.
That's the very first asset that's taken in terms of the
calculation. Even if it was a savings account.
Yes. Any account in the child's name is going to be earmarked for college. They're going to assume that 100% of that is going going to college. Whereas your 401k, the value of your house, and even the 529 is in the parent's name, even though the child is beneficiary. And so that's a more favorable way to have the money counted.
Okay, very useful.
So obviously, if you have lots and lots of money and you're never going to get financial aid, don't worry about it. Otherwise, you might not want to open these accounts.
Absolutely. And are there, I want to quickly touch upon if there are any insurance products available to save for your kids. Does that make sense before we go on a break? Ariane, do you want to take that?
Sure. So there is a permanent life insurance, which is cash value life insurance. And this is a mechanism that can be used for savings, for children, for college, for various other methods. There are some pros and cons. One thing is, again, to get back to the college calculation, life insurance does not come into that calculation. That money is considered separate. And you can borrow from your permanent life insurance policy for anything that you want, for example, for college. So if you have a few hundred thousand dollars cash value there, you could borrow it, use it for your children's college, and pay it back later or not pay it back, as the case may be. And you could also open up a permanent life insurance policy for your child and start funding that, and then your child will have that throughout their life.
But again, this will interfere with financial aid?
This will not.
Oh, this won't.
This will
okay.
not. So this money is not counted in any calculation. It will belong to the child, and that cash value will be available to the child and will grow mm-hmm. as they get older. And then they will be insured. When they get married, when they have children, they'll be insured as well. So this is something that you could give to your children if you want.
I see. Nipa, you had something to add.
Yes, so the another reason that you might want to consider whole life, on besides what Ariana just told us, is that, you know, when you invest into this whole life type of investment or a permanent life insurance, you purchase insurance on the children's name.
Mm-hmm.
And because these premiums do depend on the age, when you purchase on children's name, it tends to be much less expensive. So the premiums
What does cash value mean? I thought it was the money you put in. Oh, no, it's not.
It's money you put in that grows. So in permanent insurance, money that you put in has insurance cost as well as the growth component to it. So it has okay. cash value, and depending on which permanent product we are talking about, it might have dividend or interest, or it might, if it's a variable, then it's invested in the market and all the
growth. There a distinct advantage to doing it this way to the parent?
The advantage is that it is it could be used for any reason. So, you know, the cash value could be used not just for education, but for any purpose at all. And
I have a question here, though, because I'm a little confused about because the way I understand insurance is you pay a premium, and if something happens, you get a payout.
Right.
Obviously, this is not working like that.
It is. So, main purpose of insurance is that if something happens to you, you get, so say you bought, as an example, $100,000 insurance, and mm-hmm. Something happens to you, insurance company would pay you $100,000. But it mm-hmm. also as she mentioned earlier, there are a couple of different type of insurance products available in the market, but in this type of insurance, besides the protection, it comes with the cash value.
I see. So there's just a different kind of product.
Right.
Well, let's take a break and we'll see if we can get to this topic and elaborate it on some more. We have many things to cover today. So once again, our number is 510-770-1550. We're talking to Ariadne Horstman and Nipa Shah about financial planning for our kids' future. So Ariadne, during the break, you had talked about one factor of education planning that we had not discussed, and you really wanted to cover it. Would you like to just finish with that in terms of how parents need to look after themselves also in this whole process?
Sure. Well, what I wanted to say is that I understand that in many communities we think mostly about our children and their education, and this is a priority for us, and we're very focused on that. But it is very important to focus on your own retirement and making sure that you will be able to take care of your own needs later in life and saving money for that. So generally in the financial planning world, what we say is that you need to secure your own retirement first before you start the education planning for your children, because there are a lot of different opportunities for ways to finance education. You can take loans or work or get scholarships, different ways. But your retirement, when you're older and you don't have a lot of money, there isn't much you can do. You can hope that your children will take care of you, and that's the ideal scenario. but it's nice to have that independence as well.
So Nipa, definitely, you know, we understand that in our community, education is such a high priority, and we have certain expectations that perhaps we've got from our parents that our kids will look after us in our old age, but things are changing.
That's exactly true, and that's what I remind all my clients, that it's great that you want to pay for your kids' education, but your retirement, if not higher, at least should be equal priority for the reasons that Adriana explains, that there are options for paying for college besides you having to pay for them, right? But for retirement, if you don't have money, there are no loans. Nobody's going to give you loans. So it's, look at the whole picture, not just one thing.
And I had a question on the insurance thing also before we wind up that topic, which is I really didn't understand how what are the various kinds of insurance, because as I said, my understanding of insurance is you put in money as a premium, and then if an emergency or an accident or something like that happens, then you get a payout. But we are talking about using insurance as a means of saving for a particular purpose. And how does that work?
Sure. So let me just start by explaining there are two main kind of insurance products that are available in the market. So first insurance is a term insurance, and the other type of insurance is permanent insurance. So term insurance, just the way name says, it's only good for that term. So you buy, say, 10 years, 20 years, or 30 years term, your insurance is good for that term. So meaning that insurance main purpose is to just give you protection and nothing more. It's just like your auto insurance. If something happens to you and you have mm-hmm. this 10 years term, so during that term, if something happens to you, insurance company would pay money to your beneficiaries.
Right.
But then, that's everything that term insurance covers. But on the other hand, if you have invested in the permanent insurance, of course, if something happens to your insurance company would pay money, but just the way name says, it's permanent, meaning it's good for your whole life. So eventually, mm-hmm. right, we are all going to.
How does cash value accrue there? That's
exactly
what I wanted to know.
So in permanent insurance, the premiums tend to be much higher than the term insurance. Now, part of that premium goes to pay for the insurance expenses, but part of the premium is invested either in some fixed account, or insurance companies would pay interest or dividend on it, depending mm-hmm. on the type of permanent insurance. So because it has that, this part of your premium is accruing, so let's just assume it's earning dividend in this example. It's earning dividend, and dividend keeps compounding. Mm-hmm. So as long as you are not touching your cash, and this cash value is available to you to use for any purpose. So
I
you
see.
Have dividend, interest, and cash value that's in your account. And
so it's a savings mechanism.
It's a savings mechanism, mm-hmm. right, exactly. And the money that grows, the dividend that you earn and the money that grows in this account, it's tax deferred. So you, when you do end of year taxes every year, you do not report this value. So a lot of clients like the idea of investing in something where they do not have to pay taxes every year.
Mm-hmm.
But
the money you invest in it is not removed from your taxable income or anything. It is just something that is an asset that's not reported on the books.
The premium that you pay is not removed from your asset. It is post-tax. The growth it could be tax deferred.
Deferred meaning when you take the money out, you have to pay taxes on it?
So it depends. Yes and no. So it could either become tax-free or tax deferred. So if there are a couple of ways to access this money. So if you just withdraw the money, on the growth, you might end up paying tax. If you borrow it, then you don't pay tax. So there are a couple of ways.
Couple of ways to do it. I don't want to get in the weeds on this one, because we have quite a few things to cover, and I, Ariadne, I'm going to go to you next, because for many of us, we have property in India, or we have investments in India that we have left behind and come here. And I was wondering if you had come across specific situations where you felt that, okay, there was some need to take some action on this and make sure that the way our finances were structured were the most optimum for our future and our kids' future.
Okay, well, when we talk about overseas property and investments, I think the most important thing to remember is to be compliant. because right now there are a number of rules and regulations with the IRS and the Treasury Department on overseas accounts. And if these rules are not properly followed, you could have huge fines and penalties, and you could lose a lot of the value of those investments.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a lot of attention right now on this sort of aspect. So I would say to
right.
make sure that you're in compliance,
mm-hmm.
to be working with an accountant who's skilled in international issues. You might need a lawyer, too, depending on the situation.
Mm-hmm.
And I can talk about a couple of the things that are important. One is the FBAR. It's the foreign bank account reporting form that you need to file every year in June. That's very critical.
And I think I read somewhere that the enforcement on people who are trying to avoid listing all their non-U.S. assets
uh-huh.
is sort of ramping up, and there have
Absolutely.
Been a few amnesty programs where the IRS has given a window of time where people can report without penalty, and mm-hmm. it's something that I think they're cracking down a bit more now.
Absolutely. They're cracking down very much. And I go to a lot of seminars and meetings on these topics, and there's a lot of talk about what's going on. And so I would just recommend to everyone, if you are not compliant, try to meet with a CPA who is experienced in this international area and figure out, you know, what are the steps to take to come into compliance. And make sure to work actively on that, because the worst case scenario, if you are willfully non-compliant, if you know you're not doing it and you're not doing it, if you're kind of making a good faith effort to repair and fix the problems, that could be better in the eyes of the IRS. There's also a new form this year called the 8938. It's being filed for the first time with your taxes in this tax season. It's new for the accountants. It's new for everybody. But it's very important. If your assets total more than the calculation is different, it's between $100,000 and $150,000 for a married couple
mm-hmm.
overseas, you need to file this form. And that's very important to do correctly as well. And the final thing is make sure that you're reporting all of your worldwide income on your tax return, all the income that you have from India. And obviously, if you're paying taxes in India and filing your taxes there, whatever taxes you paid there, you'll get a tax credit here. But just make sure you're doing it right, you're in compliance, and that's the most critical thing.
Is it $10,000, right, that even if your assets are above $10,000 as of this year's rule, you need to report them? Is
so,
that correct?
Yeah, that's for the FBAR, the Foreign right. Bank Account
okay.
Reporting Form. And then now there's this new 8938, which is if you have a little bit more money, you need to report that. So in some ways, these two forms are a little bit duplication,
mm-hmm.
but it's the law, it's the rule, the fines and the penalties are enormous, so really be careful about this.
And lastly, I want to really talk about leaving money for your kids as an inheritance. I think that's something that all of us want to do, may plan to do. What are the best methods of doing that? How do we make sure that the kids don't get, I mean, at least minimize any taxation that might happen because they received it as an inheritance, they could get it as a gift. There are a few options for parents, and could you just talk about that? Nipa, do you want to take that first?
Sure. So as far as gifts are concerned, every year each parent could give each child or anyone could give gift every year up to $13,000 without having to pay gift tax on it.
Okay.
So, you know, if father and mother, and if you per child could give, you know, 13,000 times two, so that's $26,000 that you could give each child every year. But remember, anytime you give this gift to your children on irrevocable basis, it's given and you cannot take it back. But overall, when we are talking about, you know, planning for inheritance, it's mm-hmm. important to do estate planning. No matter, you know, whether you're very wealthy or whether you're middle class family,
mm-hmm.
Estate planning is very important, where you work with your financial advisor as well as the estate attorney, who they together they can help you design a plan that's right for you. So
mm-hmm.
typically in estate plan, you first create a will.
Mm-hmm.
In will, you write down all the assets that you own and who should be the beneficiaries of your assets. If you're minor children, then
mm-hmm.
it's important that you also write down who should be guardian,
the guardian of,
your,
of the children.
Children
yes,
right?
I think it's very, very, very important.
And then, but even when you have a will, your somebody still, if something were to happen to you, it it still goes in probate. Mm-hmm. So because to avoid probate, you also need to have a living trust done. So it's important that, you know, we work with an attorney who helps you design a right type of living trust. So with will and a living trust, you can, you know, write, have your assets, give it, you know, after your death, your beneficiaries get the assets.
Is there, for many people, it may be a daunting task. The will may be something that they want to do, but making a living trust may seem either a daunting task because it's that you have to go through an attorney, you have to pay attorney fees, and they may think that I don't have that much to leave behind, that I have to go to jump through all these hoops. So is there like a certain amount below which you can say, I think you're okay, you really don't need to do it this way? Or would you say, regardless of how little money you have, do it properly?
So if you just have will up to $100,000, if your assets are under $100,000, it doesn't go in probate. Anything above $100,000, it goes in probate. So if you really want to avoid probate, you really need a living trust. But mm-hmm. again, that you know, if you I've seen people do it themselves using software that are available in the market. So it's, you know, your comfort level. Ideally, if you want to make sure everything is done correctly, you should work with
an attorney. Mm-hmm.
And then also to keep in mind that currently, as of this current laws, if your assets are under the exemption, estate tax exemption is $5 million, so which is fairly high for most of us. Mm-hmm. So between, if your trust is done right, you know, up to $5 million, you can pass it on to your beneficiaries estate tax free. If you are very wealthy, then you need to, you know, work with your financial advisors as well as attorney to create, you know, more advanced trust where you can see, you know, if you could give away more than $5 million without having to pay.
So it's a complicated thing,
right,
probably beyond the scope of today's issue. But Ariadne, you have the last word on this.
Well, I just wanted to add in, if there's any kind of an international situation in your family, you should probably work with an attorney who understands the international aspects of living trusts. And there are some issues with inheritance between non-citizens and citizens. Citizens, spouses can inherit unlimited amount. If you are a non-citizen spouse, you can inherit only $60,000 tax-free. Everything above that is going to be taxed. But if you set up a living trust correctly with someone that does it involving all the right clauses, then you can have an unlimited exemption as well. This can go for children as well. So if you're leaving money to children who are citizens or non-citizens, that can make
it
a big difference.
It makes a difference to how it's treated.
And you really need to be careful. So also be careful when you set up your trust if the trustees are non-citizens or non-residents. That could be another issue. So if you have international aspects of your trust, work with someone who's experienced in international.
And with that, I think we have to end today's show. Thank you so much, Ariadne and Nipa, for sharing your expertise with us. If you want to reach them later, please email me at radio@indiacc.org. Before we go, I just want to bring to your attention to an event that's coming up that's entirely organized by kids. After all, this is a parent talk show, so I wanted to encourage them. The Vibha Youth Chapter Bay Area invites you to a table tennis tournament at ICC Table Tennis Center on April 7th. Sign up there at bayarea.vibha.org/TT. And next week, we're going for a much lighter topic. Kids are so busy after school these days that the whole family is always on the go. Are there ways to make sure the family is eating healthy? We'll talk about quick, easy and healthy dinner ideas next week. If you have an idea, again, the email to reach me is radio@indiacc.org. Tune in same time, same place next week for another live show on parenting. Till then, bye-bye.